This is Wealth Wake Up with Dick Donahue and Camille Koppenberg. KGMI and the Cascade Radio Group receive financial compensation to present this program in its entirety.
The opinions voiced on Wealth Wake Up with Dick Donahue and Camille Koppenberg are for general information only and not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual. To determine what is appropriate for you, consult a qualified professional. Investment advisory services offered through CWM LLC, a registered investment advisor. Carson Partners is a division of CWM LLC, a nationwide partnership of advisors. Guests on Wealth Wake Up with Dick Donahue and Camille Koppenberg are not affiliated with CWM LLC.
Welcome to Wealth Wake Up this Sunday morning. Dick Donahue with you here on KGMI. We're going to start out today talking about stocks versus the economy. You know, if you've listened to us, you know that we've raised our forecast on the S&P 500, but lowered our forecast for real growth. How can that be? Well, the first thing to recognize is that when we say we're bullish on stocks, doesn't mean we think the stock market is going to go up every day, every week, or even every month. It won't. Nor does it exclude the possibility of a correction in equities, which based on historical frequency is past due. We take a fundamental approach, valuing time in the market over trying to time the market. Corrections will happen from time to time. We don't know anyone who can accurately forecast them on a consistent basis. Without digging deeply into our capitalized profits model, which estimates the fair value of stocks as a whole, we remain bullish for three main reasons. First, long-term interest rates are low and are likely to remain relatively low for the next few years. Second, corporate profits are very high and will remain relatively high, even if they pull back from the record highs as the amount of government stimulus wanes. Third, even if real inflation-adjusted GDP falls short of consensus expectations in the next few years, nominal GDP, which includes both real GDP growth and inflation, should remain robust due to the Federal Reserve's overly loose monetary policy, which will remain extremely loose even if the Fed starts tapering later this year and ends quantitative easing around mid-2022. The key problem for real GDP is that massive and unsustainable fiscal stimulus and income support that happened during COVID-19 pushed retail sales well above their pre-COVID trend. Retail sales in July were up 17.5% above the level in February of 2020. To put that in perspective, the 17 months before COVID, retail sales were up 5.1%. There's only one way retail sales can grow three times its normal rate while millions are unemployed and the economy was locked down. The government pulled out the credit card. These handouts are now slowing down, and retail sales will likely drop in August. An official report came out this week, actually was a little bit of a surprise, but we're likely to moderate from the 17.5% peak growth on our trend basis for the last year. Retail sales make up about 30% of GDP. In other sectors of the economy, we'll need to pick up the slack, replenishing inventories, home building, and the consumption of services such as travel and leisure activities. But after such massive artificial stimulus, it'll be difficult for real GDP to keep growing as it has in the past 9 months. GDP includes revenues that are earned by publicly traded companies, so it also includes Main Street businesses that are not listed. It is those latter businesses that have been hurt the most by lockdowns. There's one reason listed company profits and their stock prices have outperformed the economy. The bottom line is that we are bullish for now, but fully recognize that there have been a pristine environment for stocks. A slowdown in GDP will likely slow profit growth, while raising inflation will eventually lift long-term interest rates. Tax hikes are still a threat, as are tougher COVID-related restrictions that limit a service sector's recovery. However, with the Fed as easy as it is, the tailwinds from easy money remain strong. The market is not overvalued, but is not as undervalued as it was once. Let's take a look at some of our global economic news that we had come in this week. And we found that global equities as a whole lost ground on the week, while the yield on the 10-year U.S. Treasury note rose 5 basis points to 1.37%. The price of a barrel of West Texas Intermediate crude oil continued to advance, rising to $71.85 from $69.50 a week ago. Volatility is measured by the CBOE Volatility Index, or VIX, also rose this week, firming to 19 from 17.5 last Friday. And global macro news. U.S. August retail sales beat expectations. Economists had anticipated a sharp decline in August retail sales, but the data provided an upside surprise on Thursday, showing a rise of 0.7%. If you take out auto sales, which have been held back by a shortage of semiconductors, sales rose a robust 1.8%. Along with a pair of upbeat regional Federal Reserve Bank indices from New York and Philadelphia, the data helped allay fears that the spread of Delta variant of the coronavirus is taking a sharp toll on economic growth. Meanwhile, the advance in U.S. consumer prices leveled off in August as the consumer price index rose 5.3% year over year, down from 5.4% in July. Core CPI, which excluded food and energy, rose 4%, down from 4.3%, a 30-year high in July. Despite the modest slowdown in the pace of inflation and expectations that much of the recent advance is transitory, a survey by the Federal Reserve Bank of New York shows that consumers expect inflation to rise 5.2% in the coming year. And the United Kingdom labor market bounces back. Payrolls in the United Kingdom exceeded their pre-pandemic level for the first time in August, as a record 241,000 workers were added, the Office of National Statistics reported this week. The ONS further reported that there are over 1 million unfilled jobs in the country, raising the specter of a worker shortage as the economy reopens more fully. About 1.6 million Britons remain furloughed as a result of COVID-19 restrictions, but the government-sponsored furlough program is set to expire at the end of this month. Also this week, the ONS reported that retail sales unexpectedly fell 0.9% in August, the fourth monthly decline in a row, while inflation rose to 3.2%, its highest level since 2012. And we're seeing that the House Democrats, as I talked about this on yesterday's show, but they've outlined their tax plans. The Ways and Means Committee of the U.S. House of Representatives detailed its plan this week to raise revenues to fund some of the Democrat-proposed social and climate spending plans working their way through Congress. If approved, the overall package would raise the corporate income tax rate to 36.5% from 21%, create a 3% surtax on those earning above $5 million a year, raise the capital gains tax to at least 25% from 20%, and to as high as 31.8% on certain high earners, among other measures. A study by the Joint Tax Committee shows the Democratic proposal would increase taxes on households earning more than $1 million by 10.6%. Analysts expect the tax provisions emanating from the House to face tough sledding in the Senate, as two high-profile Democratic moderates, Kristen Sinema of Arizona and Joe Manchin of West Virginia, have expressed opposition to large tax hikes. President Joe Biden met with the pair this week, but media reports indicate the senators remain unpersuaded on the need for a package as large as the one proposed, which would cost about $3.5 trillion. And we're seeing growth slowing in China. The pace of economic growth in China slowed in August. Data this week show retail sales rose 2.5% year over year, slower than the prior month's 8.5% pace, and well below estimates of a 6.3% advance. Industrial production missed estimates as well, rising 5.3% compared with August's 2020, down from July's 6.4% pace. The spread of the Delta variant was forced several port closures in recent months, and continued restrictions have restrained economic activity. And look at some quick hits from around the world. The People's Bank of China injected a large amount of liquidity into the Chinese banking system on Friday amid growing concerns over the fate of heavily indebted property developer Evergrande. And with dirtier energy sources being phased out, U.S. natural gas prices reached their highest level in over a decade this week on tight supplies and growing demands. Price jumps in Europe are even more dramatic as mild winds reduced output from wind turbines amid lower than normal gas inventories. And Canadian consumers' prices rose at their highest pace in 18 years in August, jumping 4.1%. The news comes less than a week before Canada's federal election, which finds Prime Minister Justin Trudeau's Liberal Party locked in a very tight race with the Conservative Party headed by Aaron O'Toole. Canadians go to the polls on Monday, September 20th. That is tomorrow. And one more quick one here. Scientists at the U.S. Food and Drug Administration this week said that COVID-19 vaccines approved for use in the U.S. protect against severe disease and death without booster shots, clouding the outlook on the need for further inoculations. Reports circulated this week that the Pfizer vaccine may be approved for use in children between the ages of 5 and 11 as early as the end of October. We'll be back with more Global Wrap-Up in just a minute.
Enjoy the best halibut and chips in town at Luna's Bistro every Tuesday for just $16.95. And every Thursday is Luna's succulent slow-roasted prime rib night. And don't miss Luna's famous Saturday and Sunday brunch from 10 to 3 with a mouth-watering menu and bottomless mimosas. That's right, bottomless mimosas. For incredible food, the best service, and happy hour specials, visit Luna's Bistro. Open Tuesday through Sunday in Barkley Village next to Regal Cinemas and online at lunabistro.com.
Boomers, baby boomers, that is. You're probably listening right now because 10,000 of you a day are turning 65. Many of you are still working and have employer-sponsored healthcare, but many of you do not. For some of you, turning 65 is a financial relief. The high cost of healthcare is finally reduced by qualifying for Medicare. But now what? Medicare supplement, Medicare Advantage plan, prescription drug plan? Which do you choose? That's where D&D Insurance is able to help. I'm Derek, and my wife Denise and I have been helping seniors navigate the new waters of Medicare for over 12 years. We represent almost all the top carriers in Washington, explain how they work, and help you enroll in a plan that works best for you. We let all our clients know we're not paying your premiums or your copays, so let's make an informed decision based on your needs. We're here to help. Give us a call at 392-8159 or stop by. We're on the corner of 3rd and Vista in Ferndale. We're online at dndinsurance.com.
KGMI Connects is a new live show each weekday afternoon about our community and you.
Oh my gosh, they're going to take away my health care. Yeah. They're going to do this, they're going to do that.
What about that?
You know, the three justices that Trump put on the Supreme Court all voted to uphold Obamacare.
Yeah.
Shocker.
Uh-huh.
Join us each weekday at 4 p.m. for KGMI Connects on KGMI News Talk 790, 96.5 FM, and KGMI.com.
The opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of KGMI or the Cascade Radio Group.
Welcome back to Wealth Wake Up. Dick Donahue with you here on KGMI. We're Asset Advisors located out in Ferndale in the Pacific Commerce Center. That's at 5060 Pacific Highway, Suite 101, Ferndale, 98248. Our phone number, 360-733-1200. Got questions for us? Give us a call. Again, 733-1200. Or check out our website at wealthwakeup.com. Okay, a couple more quick notes here on our macro news on the global basis this week. There's a new security pact between the U.S., United Kingdom, and Australia that's aimed at countering the influence of China in the region. It'll provide Australia with new nuclear submarine technology. As a result of the agreement, which has drawn the ire of the French government, Australia will abandon the deal it already has in place with France to acquire subs from France. Furthering its regulatory crackdown, China announced plans to tighten the supervision of its casino operators in Macau. And the United States Securities and Exchange Commission Chair Gary Gensler this week called for greater efficiency and transparency in the market for U.S. corporate, municipal, and mortgage bonds. He also warned that the cryptocurrency market is rife with fraud, scams, and abuse. And there's a record 60 cargo ships that are anchored off the Southern California coast awaiting space in port, further tangling supply chain snarls, according to Rutgers. Okay, we got the Consumer Price Index update for the month of August, and they continue to increase, but at a slowest pace since January, climbing 0.3% for the month. However, even with a slower increase, consumer prices are up 5.3% versus a year ago, well above the Federal Reserve's 2% long-term target. Although some analysts may think that the August data is a win for the transitory camp, overall consumer prices are still up 3.3% annual rate in August, which is well above the Fed's inflation target. Energy led the overall 0.3% price gain, rising 2% for the month, with food prices rising 0.4%. Core prices, which exclude food and energy, rose 0.1% in August. These prices were held down by an unusually wide array of price decliners, including airfares down 9.1%, used cars and trucks down 1.5%, motor vehicle insurance down 2.8%, hotels and motels down 3.3%. Combined, those four factors reduced both the headline gain in the CPI as well as the core CPI growth by 0.2 percentage point. Yes, used cars and truck prices may continue to decline in the months ahead after a large run-up in the last year, but airfares and motor vehicle insurance remain below their pre-COVID trend. In the months ahead, we anticipate a faster pace of core inflation. Housing rents, both from actual tenants, as well as the imputed rent of owner-occupants, make up almost 40% of the core CPI, have been accelerating lately and should accelerate more due to the end of the national term moratorium on tenant evictions. Moreover, with the national Case-Shiller home price index up 18.6% in the last year, some would-be homeowners may shift towards renting, putting further upward pressure on rents. Notably, new vehicle prices rose 1.2% in August, or up 7.6% versus a year ago, the largest increase since 1980, and a result of a continued shortage in semiconductor chips. The hope that supply chain issues would fade after a few months has proven wrong, as recent Delta-driven shutdowns in Asian country factories and ports have only made matters worse. Although used car and truck prices declined in August, the 12-month increase for that category remains an extremely elevated 31.9%. One way to assess the underlying trend is to measure price gains since February of last year and the last month pre-COVID, which would naturally include price declines early on in the shutdowns. Since then, consumer prices are up 3.6% annual rate, while core prices are up 3.1% annualized. As the massive increase in the M2 measure of the money supply continues to gain traction, we think the ranks of those claiming the recent burst in inflation is transitory will dwindle. The Federal Reserve and many others assume inflation will be close to 2% next year. We'll have to see what happens there. Okay, let's take a look at August's retail sales report, which also came out this week. And retail sales rebounded in August, surprising the consensus, increasing 0.7% for the month. 10 of 13 major categories rose in August, with non-store retailers, internet and mail order leading the way, followed by general merchandise stores as back-to-school shopping was in full effect. The weakest category by far was autos, as supply chain issues continued to wreak havoc on that sector. In fact, retail sales excluding autos rose 1.8% in August. Another way to look at this is sales are up 17.7% versus February of last year, which was pre-COVID. Core sales, which exclude the most volatile categories of autos, building materials, and gas station sales, rose 2.1% in August and are up 15% from a year ago and up 18.2% versus February of 2020. In other words, due to temporary government support, retail sales are running hotter than they would have in the absence of COVID, even as the level of output, which is real GDP, is still running lower than it would have been in the absence of COVID. It's not been an even recovery for all major categories, though. For instance, non-store retailers are up 34.7%. Sporting goods stores are up 33.2%, while have grown significantly faster than overall retail since February of last year. The last category of sales to get above February 2020 levels was restaurants and bars, which finally moved into the green in April, are now up 8.7% from 18 months ago. Looking ahead, given that overall retail sales are still above the pre-COVID trend, we expect a modest trend decline in the year ahead. However, as long as policymakers don't completely panic because of the Delta variant, we also expect sales at restaurants and bars to buck the trend and move higher, along with sales of services not counted by the retail trade report as America gets back towards normal. In the months ahead, the path of retail sales will be a battle between a number of opposing factors. Rising wages, jobs, and inflation will all be tailwinds for retail sales, while the waning of the temporary and artificial boost from stimulus checks, along with an end to overly excessive jobless benefits, will be headwinds. In other news, initial jobless claims rose 20,000 last week to 332,000. Meanwhile, continuing claims declined 187,000 to a new recovery low of 2.665 million. With the end of additional unemployment benefits nationally earlier this month, all eyes will be on the jobs recovery as we move into the final quarter of 2021. Also, on the manufacturing front, the Philadelphia Fed Index, which is a measure of factory sentiment in that region, rose to very robust 30.7 in September from 19.4 in August, signaling strong growth in that region for the month. And industrial production rose less than expected in August, largely the result of the late-in-the-month plant shutdowns related to Hurricane Ida. In fact, Federal Reserve estimates that without the storm-related headwinds, the overall index would have risen 0.7% for the month. But if you look at the details, the disruptions were concentrated in manufacturing, petrochemicals, plastic resins, refining operations, and mining, oil and gas extraction industries that have large presence in the Gulf of Mexico. It's not a surprise that mining was the weakest major category in August, falling 0.6%, its first decline in 4 months. Meanwhile, manufacturing output managed to eke out a gain of 0.2% despite the disruptions. The gain was driven by continued growth in auto production, which rose 0.1% in August after a huge 9.5% gain in July. Outside the auto sector, manufacturing rose 0.2% in August. Finally, utilities output rose 3.2% in August as unseasonably warm weather boosted demand for air conditioning. Notably, the 0.4% gain in the headline index was enough to finally push that measure above its pre-pandemic high. That said, it's important to keep in mind that despite hitting an important milestone, production still has a long way to go to meet current demand. Ongoing issues with supply chains and labor shortages are hampering a more robust rise in activity, with job openings in the manufacturing sector currently at a record high and more than double pre-pandemic levels. We expect more temporary disruptions from Ida in September, but a return to the upward trend in overall industrial production in the months ahead. It looks like the worst of Delta concerns are beginning to subside, and labor disincentives are dissipating, as well as the end of pandemic-related unemployment payments. In other factory-related news, the Empire State Index, which is a measure of New York factory sentiment, soared to plus 34.3 in September from plus 18.3 in August. And finally, we got trade inflation data. Import prices fell 0.3% in August, while export prices increased 0.4%. In the last year, import prices are up 9%, while export prices are up 16.8%. Okay. Well, got a couple quick little ones I want to push in here real quick. Seeing the Democrats are pushing a bill to lower Medicare eligibility to age 60, House Democrats have introduced legislation that would lower Medicare eligibility down to 60 from 65. And if the Improving Medicare Coverage Act would become law, the ripple effects could be numerous. Among other things, the proposed law would potentially cut the cost of someone's health insurance from $900 a month to just $160 a month if they're between the ages of 60 and 65. Plus, it would potentially cut how much someone spends on health care annually by 75%. This potential law could also have positive effects for businesses. Employees would more likely be switching to Medicare and opt out of their employer's health insurance. However, there is likely to be a pushback from healthcare providers. When a patient uses Medicare, the healthcare providers are typically compensated at a lower rate. Healthcare providers will also have less flexibility to negotiate their prices under Medicare compared to private or employer-based health insurance. Could we see hospitals, for example, hospital systems trying to resist wholesale change in Medicare eligibility age? Yep, it's very possible. And while it's impossible to look into the future and see how the Senate will vote on this, it will be important to keep an eye on this, as it will revolutionize Medicare. And I can tell you right now, being on Medicare doctors don't like to have to take less money for providing the same level of care. So you put that extra age group of 60 to 65 on Medicare, you can count on worse services than you're getting today. Anywho with you, we'll be right back.
Hi, I'm Wade Gardner, General Manager of Builders Alliance. I'm very excited about the wonderful staff we have at Builders Alliance. Haley is one of the members of our sales team. The other day, I overheard a conversation Haley was having with a customer about an entry door. I'd like Haley to tell you about that.
I'd love to. The customer already knew they were done with their old wood door and wanted to upgrade to a fiberglass door. And we landed on the Therma-True fiberglass entry door. They were so excited to hear about the Therma-True factory finish coat paint job. They were able to get it painted at the factory. It matches their jams. It was a beautiful deep red called Cabernet. And they don't have to worry about any fading or scratching. And worst case, if something happens, that paint coat is covered by a 10-year warranty. I just love helping people find a new front door because that really is the centerpiece to your home. And Therma-True makes a fantastic product to meet those needs.
I welcome you to Builders Alliance in Bellingham and Cedar Woolley.
Oh, so much better than that tent we stayed in last year.
We sure are putting this new RV to work. I'm glad we're here early because it seems that everyone has stepped up their mode of camping and, well, they're all here.
I told you not to post about it last year. It was supposed to be our little secret, but now everyone knows.
Well, Kent's Garden and Nursery's annual sale is just too good to be true. I had to show off all my fabulous new trees and shrubs. And now, well, we're the garden envy of all our neighbors.
And that's why we're camped out waiting for Kent's to open. I'm ready to finish planting my pond. And with 30% off everything but the dirt, I think we can buy enough greenery to create that living fence between us and you know who.
Oh, I see they're opening the gates. I got my trusty wheelbarrow. Let's go.
Don't miss Kent's annual fall save 30% off everything but the dirt sale. Friday, September 9th through the 19th. It's the biggest sale of the year at the largest nursery in town at Kent's Garden and Nursery on Northwest Drive in Bellingham.
You go to great lengths to keep your carpet clean.
Kids, get out of the living room.
You spend your days scolding loved ones.
Honey, take your shoes off.
And trying to create an invisible shield to keep all the dirt and stains out.
Welcome to our home. And just please stay on the plastic, okay?
From summer's barbecue stains to your kids' dirty cleats, call Swans today or visit them online at swanscarpetcleaning.com.
Hi, this is Marcus from Western Solar. Now just may be the best time to go solar at your home or business. Why? Because we're offering a zero-down financing on premium Panasonic high-efficiency solar panels with a rock-solid 25-year warranty. This labor and equipment warranty ensures that your solar system will not cost you a dime after it's installed. So you get the local trusted quality of installation with Western Solar and the peace of mind knowing that it's backed by international financial security for the next 25 years. And there's a 26% tax credit that is scheduled to expire at the end of 2022. When we install solar, it's not just a way to save you money. It's a way for you to leave a legacy of clean, affordable energy for the generations that follow. Call Western Solar today. We're local, well-informed, and we'll give you an honest assessment of your options. Stop by our office on Home Road in Bellingham to meet our team, and you'll see why that for almost two decades, we've been installing clean energy, investing in our community, and loving what we do. Western Solar at westernsolarinc.com.
The latest local news and important topics of the day from the West Mechanical Studio.
When it comes to your comfort and the air quality in your home, rely on the trained comfort specialists at West Mechanical Heating, Air Conditioning, and Electric with a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Find them at westmechanical.net.
Get the latest news and information 24/7 with KGMI News Talk 790, 96.5 FM in Bellingham and KGMI.com.
Welcome back to Wealth Wake Up. Dick Donahue with you this Sunday morning. Okay, well, now I'm going to talk about a whole series of different things here. First of all, we're going to talk about tariffs. You know, they're never really a very good idea. And those on aluminum are especially bad. Aluminum prices are up 59% from a year ago. America's 10% tariffs on the metal are not relieving any headaches at beer and non-alcoholic beverage manufacturers. The tariffs were originally put in place in 2018, ostensibly to protect domestic aluminum producers. Tell Alcoa that out here at Intalco. The theory was that China and other foreign producers were dumping aluminum into the U.S. at low prices below costs to capture market share and supposedly drive American producers of aluminum out of business. In fact, the idea of dumping is one of the great unicorns of trade policy, often imagined but rarely seen in reality. Even state-supported Chinese firms cannot sustain such losses, bleeding money with each shipment of aluminum sent across the ocean. Unfortunately, President Joe Biden has tightened the tariffs since coming into the office. One of his first actions as president was to reinstate aluminum tariffs on aluminum exported from the United Arab Emirates, which had been previously lifted. Consequently, aluminum prices are now much higher than they were in 2018 when the 10% tariffs were originally inflicted on American users of the metal. As for China, it's now a net importer of aluminum, and things are getting worse for aluminum users around the world. A coup in Guinea over the weekend caused prices to jump upward from what they had already a 10-year high. Guinea is the world's largest producer of bauxite, a key ingredient of alumina, and the conflict has put the metal's supply chain at risk. Monster Beverage Company's CEO has warned that the stratospheric climb in prices has put that company in uncharted territory, and Heineken has said that the out-of-control prices will have a material effect on the strength of its business. That translates into higher costs for manufacturers, meaning less resources available to expand, create employment opportunities, and provide new products. The beverage industry has been especially hard hit. According to the Beer Institute, even before aluminum tariffs, aluminum cans were already the single largest cost in American beer production. Cans made up 11.4% of the cost of manufacturing beer in the U.S. Beer, ale, and other malt beverages at home prices rose 2.1% from July of 2020 through July of this year, according to the Bureau of Labor Statistics Consumer Price Index released in August. The aluminum tariff is an unnecessary tax on beverage makers and all users of aluminum and is made worse by the recent jump in the price of the metal. It's high time to stop taxing Americans for the simple act of having a cola or a beer. Okay, well, here's another one. Four things to know as employers and states ponder legal challenges to the president's vaccine mandates. The president's mandate for employers with more than 99 employees to require COVID-19 vaccinations likely is going to face legal challenges from employers and perhaps from states, knowledgeable observers are saying. In remarks at the White House, Biden said a week ago that he had directed the Labor Department to develop an emergency regulation giving the Occupational Safety and Health Administration the authority to enforce a national vaccine mandate for larger employers. While some hailed Biden for taking strong action beyond the federal workforce, others expressed disbelief that they consider authoritarian measures. There are four things to know about the government's vaccine requirements that are likely to play out in court. Number one, what the states are saying. Also, already some Republican state attorney generals are suggesting that legal challenges to the administration's moves. Last Friday, that's a week ago, Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton outright announced a lawsuit on Twitter calling the mandated on employers of 100 more workers the most unconstitutional, illegal thing that I've ever seen out of an administration in the modern American history. Biden was asked about the potential state challenges to his vaccine mandate while speaking at a school in the District of Columbia. And have at it, the president said, adding, I am so disappointed that particularly some Republican governors have been so cavalier with health of the kids, so cavalier with the health of their communities. We're playing for real here. This isn't a game. I don't know of any scientist out there in this field that doesn't think it takes considerable sense to do the six things that I've suggested. One Republican governor, Phil Scott of Vermont, came out in support of Biden's actions. And Indiana Attorney General Todd Roitke tweeted that Biden's decision to demand American workers get vaccinated or risk losing their jobs is what one would expect of dictators in a banana republic. Arizona Attorney General Mark Brnovich called Biden's move a devastating step towards nationalizing health care systems and said he would act to defend the state's sovereignty. Missouri Attorney General Eric Schmidt, in a tweet, wrote, "Biden's historic overreach on vaccine mandates will not stand in Missouri. We're at a crossroads in America. We are and what we're going to be. We must fight back." And South Carolina Attorney General Alan Wilson also weighed in, tweeting that his office will fight overreach that may limit individuals' personal freedoms. The second is legal grounds to oppose the mandate. In this case, individual personal freedoms are not likely to be the question as the president tells private companies what to do and puts jobs on the line, according to Ilya Shapiro, Vice President and Director of Constitutional Studies at the Libertarian Cato Institute. The legal analysis here is not focused on individual right, but on federal powers, according to Shapiro. He referred to the mandate as constitutional triple threat. First, he said it's a constitutional issue of separation of powers. As controversial as it was, Congress passed the Affordable Care Act's mandate that Americans purchase health insurance. It wasn't imposed by President Barack Obama. It's not in the executive branch's enumerated powers, said Shapiro, who noted that he is pro-vaccine but anti-mandate. Second, Shapiro said, states traditionally have regulated public health matters. Some legal experts contend that Biden has the power to impose OSHA mandates on companies through the Constitution's Commerce Clause. That provision allows Congress to regulate commerce among states and foreign nations. In 1970, Congress passed the Occupational Safety and Health Act, which established the agency and included emergency temporary provisions. Requiring many companies to make vaccines a condition of employment is further removed from the Commerce Clause than the Obamacare mandates for individuals to buy and companies to supply health insurance. Moreover, the U.S. Supreme Court in 2012 upheld Obama's so-called individual mandate, but rejected the Commerce Clause argument and instead called the mandate a tax. "I don't know of any federal vaccine mandate," Shapiro said. "The level of government is important. Vaccine requirements before going to school are at a state, municipal, or local level. Third, forcing businesses to require their employees to be vaccinated is not a proper use of federal power," according to Shapiro. And White House Chief of Staff Ron Klain, longtime Biden aide, retweeted a comment from NBC News correspondent Stephanie Rule that said, "OSHA doing this vax mandate as an emergency workplace safety rule is the ultimate workaround for the federal government to require vaccinations." You know, Biden made a poor legally and politically. Jonathan Turley, a law professor at George Washington, wrote in his website, "The problem is the thing being worked around is the Constitution," Turley wrote. "Courts will now be asked to ignore the admission and uphold the self-admitted evasion of constitutional protections." He added, "The workaround was needed because, as some of us have previously said, during both the Trump and Biden administrations, the federal government does not have the clear authority to impose public health mandates. Authority for such mandates has traditionally been recognized within state authority." And then there's the Supreme Court precedent. In 1905, the Supreme Court ruled 7-2 in the case of Jacobson versus Massachusetts that the city of Cambridge, Massachusetts, and thus other local governments could levy fines against individuals who refused to take the smallpox vaccine. In 1922, the High Court ruled unanimously in the case of Zuck versus King to uphold the power of states to require vaccinations before children attend public school. But a recent ruling could bear on Biden's actions. The Supreme Court last month determined that the Centers of Disease Control and Prevention lacked the authority to impose a national moratorium on evictions during the pandemic. The High Court ruled in the case of Alabama Association of Realtors versus the Department of Health and Human Services. The Supreme Court slapped down the CD's imposition of nationwide eviction moratorium. And Biden's new COVID-19 vaccine mandate allows the Occupational Safety and Health Administration to bypass regular rulemaking processes, which includes making public comment. OSHA must prove employees are exposed to grave danger before imposing an emergency measure. In the case in 1983, OSHA issued an emergency regulation to limit worker exposure to asbestos, but it was struck down by the U.S. Court of Appeals in the Fifth Circuit. The appeals court ruled that asbestos may present a danger, but OSHA failed to show the regulation was needed in order to alleviate the risk. And four is where public opinion stands. A poll from Job Creators Network, an advocacy group for small business, found the plurality of 42% of those surveyed agreed that mandatory vaccinations would hurt small businesses, while only 33% thought the mandates would help. Other polls, though, have shown support for mandating vaccinations with COVID-19. For example, in Arizona, 68% are in favor, 32% are opposed. Georgia, 63% are in favor, opposed to 37. Michigan, 61% in favor, 39% are opposed. Pennsylvania, 64% in favor, 36% are opposed. And in Wisconsin, 68% are in favor, opposed are 32%. So as an Associated Press poll found that 62% support the government vaccine mandate. Numerous major employers already require employees to get vaccinated. Last week, Biden himself said even Fox News requires employees to say whether they have been vaccinated. Other news outlets reported last month that Fox News requires employees to disclose their vaccination status. However, one liberal think tank waiting until after Biden announced the government mandates on private employers. Patrick Gaspard, president and CEO of the Center for American Progress, sent an email last week to staff announcing the think tank's new policy. CAP must do its part to advance this program at a moment when both private and public concerns must be aligned, Gaspard wrote. In light of this, CAP will requiring all full vaccinations against COVID-19 for every member of this staff as we return to the workplace. So we're seeing a lot of varied input on that one. We'll be right back.
Hi, it's Scott from Northwest Sleep Solutions in Fairhaven. You know, a lot of folks sleep a little hot, and it only gets worse in the summer. Being a warm sleeper myself, I am very aware of this when choosing the mattresses we carry. We use more natural materials in both our Northwest Sleep line and our 45th Street latex mattresses. The natural foams are more breathable, and by adding wool layers and natural covers, we can really increase the airflow. In our Beautyrest line, we opt to use the cooler gel foams rather than the standard memory foams that not only sleep hot, they actually remember your shape. And our Tempur-Pedic line includes the cooling breeze models that take cooling to a whole new level. Finally, we carry washable wool toppers and mattress pads that can cool off your existing mattress. So keep cool, Whatcom County, and come see us at Northwest Sleep Solutions on the corner of 10th and McKenzie in Fairhaven.
The solution for a good night's sleep.
I'm Washington Secretary of State Kim Wyman. Thousands of offices are up for election this November, from mayors and city council members to school boards, fire districts, and more. Don't miss the opportunity to weigh in on local matters that matter to you. Make sure you're ready to vote by visiting votewa.gov today. That's VOTEWA.gov. And remember, Election Day is November 2nd.
Sponsored by the Office of the Secretary of State and aired in cooperation with the Washington State Association of Broadcasters and this station.
'Cause there ain't no doubt I love this land. God bless the USA.
Welcome back. Dick Donahue with you this Sunday morning. Got questions for us? Give us a call, 360-733-1200. And as I mentioned on yesterday's show, I still have got some Mariners tickets available for the last home series of the year. The Oakland series starting on the 27th, that's a Monday, and then the LA Angels series, the final series of the year. Basically, the Saturday night game, the second is gone, but the Friday night game is available, and of course, there's one game at 12:10 on Sunday. So if you're interested, give us a call, 733-1200. Thanks. Okay, let's talk about four reasons why you shouldn't invest in target date funds. What are target date funds? Why should you avoid them? Well, aside from the three letters, there's little fun in target date funds. TDFs have become a focal point of many employer-sponsored retirement accounts. But do they make sense for you and your situation? There are so many different options when it comes to investing your 401k. Why settle with a fund that is made up of other funds? Let's talk about the definition. I know that the last sentence is a little confusing, so let me clear it up. Target date funds are basically a fund of funds. This means that instead of holding stocks like other mutual funds, the fund itself holds other mutual funds. A mutual fund is simply a basket of investments such as stocks or bonds. Have you ever seen the movie Inception with Leonardo DiCaprio or Joseph Gordon-Levitt? It's a similar idea here. Just like there was a dream within a dream, these are funds within a fund. Let's look at a little history on these things. Target date funds can be traced back to the 1990s, which have become much more popular in the early 2000s. The Prudential Protection Act was passed in 2006 to strengthen retirement benefits for more Americans. For example, it raised contribution limits for retirement accounts, allowed for direct conversions to Roth IRAs from qualified plans, and much more. This bill also allowed for investment advice for workplace retirement through a plan sponsor. This aspect of the bill created an opportunity for target date funds in all Americans' retirement accounts. In 2017, the popularity was considered when you look at all target date funds offered. In total, they held about $1 trillion in assets under management. Investors who like to set it up and forget it have grown a strong liking to target date funds due to the manager's passive approach in investing. Essentially, target date funds will assess how far away you are from retirement, create a portfolio that best recognizes how much someone should be risking at a given age. For example, some with a longer trajectory for retirement would have more money allocated towards stocks than bonds and vice versa. So why don't I like them? Well, it's a strong word, not liking them or hating them. I guess you could say I strongly dislike them. Most 401k providers offer a variety of mutual funds to diversify an individual's portfolio. Oftentimes, there are multiple options for large cap, mid cap, small cap, fixed income, international funds. There are many ways to be diversified without investing in a target date fund. There are four reasons why you should not let your friends keep their investments in a target date fund. One is the generalization of risk tolerance. One of the first concepts that frustrates me about these funds is that they assume that all individuals have the same risk tolerance based on their time until retirement. Every individual has such a unique financial circumstance that tends to adjust their level of risk tolerance. For example, an individual may have a more aggressive risk tolerance and wants to achieve a higher level of return. An individual might be 60 years old, but he or she may still want to be invested in a portfolio with a higher percentage of equities. Risk tolerance and how they relate to an individual's goals is one of the most important aspects of a financial plan, and target date funds do not take that into consideration. Second is costs. Although the fees associated with target date funds have come down in recent years, they still tend to be very much more expensive than compiling your mutual funds within your 401k provider. To start, these TDFs typically charge above average expense fees. Big name custodians such as Fidelity and Vanguard have index funds with expense ratios as low as 0.4%, whereas the TDFs average an expense ratio of over 0.5%. This is a pretty substantial amount for a fund that is passive in nature. You should also be wary of being charged twice in a TDF. Since these funds are made up of other funds, they also have separate expense ratios. You'll need to look into each of these funds and make sure that they're not double-dipping you. Third, there's fairly high international exposure. Now, there's times when you want to have that, there's times when you don't. But international investments come within an added layer of risk. All countries have regulatory risk. The latest crackdown we've seen in China, international investments can add a level of risk that some investors are not comfortable with. For example, some target date funds have longer time frames of over 30% international funds. Although diversification is imperative for every individual's portfolio, it's important to look through each fund to verify what the holdings are made up of. You know, this fits in with our asset allocation discussions that we've been having on several shows, especially on the Saturday show lately. It's important that you monitor each piece of what the market is doing, including the international markets. There are times to be invested in and there's times of not. Well, a target date fund is automatically, as I said, in many cases going to put up to 30% of that money in an international fund. Also, there's the wrong asset allocation. If you're planning on retiring in 2050, you are thrown into a fund with assumptions on how your assets should be allocated. This fund does not take into consideration which assets you'll hold in other non-401k accounts, or what if your plan on retiring at 55 years of age. The asset allocation for this individual's target date fund would not take this into consideration. Then there's a SWOT analysis. Although I did bash on these funds for the majority of this talk, there are some benefits. However, from my standpoint as a fiduciary, it would be unethical for me to advise anyone to invest in funds that automatically allocate assets without regard to an individual's financial situation. That is exactly what these target date funds do. With a little bit of research or by contacting a professional, you should be able to diversify your retirement portfolio with other funds provided in your 401ks. So, very important facts for you to keep in mind. Okay, well, gonna see how this works out here. I had a question here about health insurance through my employer's spouse's employer replacing the Medicare Part B. This was from a radio listener who wanted to be sure he wouldn't be penalized when he signs up for Medicare Part B coverage through age 65. He said, I didn't sign up for Medicare Part B when first eligible because I had credible coverage with my employer. The Part B premium was going to be very expensive because of my income history. I have since retired and still have not signed up for Part B since I can get the same coverage now as a dependent on my wife's coverage with the same employer. Same insurance coverage now as a dependent as I previously had as an employee. Will I have a penalty to pay on the premium if I enroll in Part B? And the answer is, he still has credible insurance coverage due to being covered under his wife's work insurance, so he will not have to pay a penalty because he did not have his own insurance. And another quick one here. A little item I think is important for you to pay attention to. TikTok promotes sex, drugs, and alcohol to kids, an investigation finds. Video sharing platform TikTok promotes sexual content to underage users through its suggestion algorithm, according to investigation by the Wall Street Journal. They said they found that there are 31 fake TikTok accounts registered to users between ages 13 and 15. They studied the For You feeds, which consist of videos recommended to users, that showed that the underage accounts, thousands of videos depicting drugs, pornography, sexual content, and alcohol use, including 100 videos promoting pornography, subscription services, and sex products, according to the investigation, which took place over several months. One particular account registered a 13-year-old who was shown 569 videos related to drug use, including meth and cocaine addiction. Got a lot of little notes here on this I think that are important. Basically, TikTok did not want to cooperate, but they said TikTok users must be 13 years of old. Users under 18 need parental permission to use the app. According to its terms of service, however, there is no mechanism preventing underage users from signing up or verifying their parental approval. So just an FYI, watch out for kids on TikTok. Dick Donahue with you with Wealth Wake Up here this Sunday morning. Don't forget our live shows at 11 o'clock on Saturdays. Got questions for us? Give us a call, 360-733-1200. Thanks, and have a great week.
The opinions voiced on Wealth Wake Up with Dick Donahue and Camille Copenberg are for general information only and not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual. To determine what is appropriate for you, consult a qualified professional. Investment advisory services offered through CWM LLC, a registered investment advisor. Carson Partners is a division of CWM LLC, a nationwide partnership of advisors. Guests on Wealth Wake Up with Dick Donahue and Camille Copenberg are not affiliated with CWM LLC.